No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. You know, I do this show every week, and today I'm going to get to do a fun show because my guest is somebody that I know personally. He's a very sweet man. We don't know each other really well, but we've stood outside in the cold and gotten signatures together and campaigned together. And there's something that bonds you when you do that. And I got to tell you, he's a really nice guy. His name is John Cheeks, and he's come to us today to talk about the fact that he thought he won $340 million in the lottery, only to find out that these guys are telling him that they put up the wrong numbers. But I'm not going to get into that. He's going to tell us all about it. I just want to tell you a little bit about him. He's run for public office 7 times in District of Columbia for council chairman, for ward chairman, for House of Representatives. And he is the founder of and national executive director of the United States Citizens Recovery Initiative Alliance, and he serves on the Special Committee for Public Policy on the U.S. Slavery Compensation. He is also the founder of the U.S. Casualty Holding and Trust LLC. He's a businessman, he's a politician, and he's a very nice man. So welcome to the show, John. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Senator. If I can be formal with you, or should I address you as Mike?
You can call me whatever you want, man, because we know each other.
And
as you well know, no matter what you call me, it won't be any worse than what the Washington Post has said about either one of us, probably.
I know. They've got their own hearing devices in their ears, that one would say.
They really do.
But let's start out. Thank you for allowing me to come on your show.
Of course. And let's start out with what happened to you. It's just the most amazing story, I think. So please tell us what happened. You bought a lottery ticket, like we all do, and then what?
Well, the lottery ticket was purchased on Friday, January 6th. I purchased one lottery ticket, well, several lottery tickets for the Mega Ball, because that was the higher paying jackpot at the time, and two tickets for the Powerball, which I didn't really have a whole lot of interest in because it was lower than the Mega Ball.
Right.
Both tickets were purchased on the same night. And, of course, I received a call from my mother, who was in the hospital at that time, you know, saying, son, play my numbers. I did, but I didn't play them in the combinations that I should have played them in.
Uh-oh.
And, oh, yeah, that Saturday I went in to see my mother. She was in the hospital in Virginia. And she was sitting up in the bed. Well, son, did you win? I said, Mom, I don't know. I haven't checked. She goes, I know you won the lottery. This is, keep in mind, this is for the drawing on Friday. The Mega Ball she was referring to. So her nurse showed me the phone, which the phone had her birth month, her birth date, her year and month combined, and my year and my age, as well as the Mega Ball being 13, which was my mother's month and my sister's month, 10 and 3. And mm-hmm. I felt so low. because I was told to play it. And, you know, my mother criticized me for not listening. And, you know, it's nothing worse than a mother criticizing. You can take it from anybody, but not mom. So I had the Powerball ticket in my pocket for the Faraday drawing. And, you know, I at that point, my you know, excitement was sucked out of me by my mother. So that night, Saturday night, I was completing my business model plan for U.S. Casualty Holding and Trust, the home trust bank to help people who normally get rejected by regular conventional banks here. You know, credit scores are big and applying for a house. And we were coming on to eliminate the credit score requirement and just go with the income requirement. And we were not discriminating or being prejudiced as to what type of income one would post to buy a home from us. And my accountant was all over me and jumping on me and telling me I had too much in my budget. I had to make sure that I have all my, I've identified all my debts and everything. And this was the same night of the lottery of the Powerball. So, of course, you know, I'm really feeling, you know, challenged by my accountant, and I was angry because we were going to go private and sell 75-cent shares to private shareholders. So, of course, it was around, I think, midnight or so, and I just was tired of talking to him, so I hung up the phone. Why don't I check to see if this Powerball ticket is okay to myself? So I did. I turned my system on, looked at the, went to the DC Lottery's webpage or website, whichever you want to call it. And there was Powerball numbers. And I had my ticket and I looked at them and I said, wow, these numbers look familiar. So I looked closer and all of them ran matched. And wow. I said, now this system is messing with me. Let me shut it down, dismantle it, unplug it. I totally dismantled the system, you know, to where it was off. 2 minutes later, I plugged it back in. There are my numbers back on the website. I didn't get excited because I was tired. I was actually exhausted from all of from my mother criticizing me, from my accountant challenging me on my budget for the new startup that we have here. And I just took a deep breath and politely called my friend, close friend of mine. I said, look, looks like I've won the lottery. And of course he says, it can only happen to you.
It must stun you. You must say, oh my God, no, that couldn't have happened, right? No,
it didn't stun me. I was exhausted, Mike. I was tired from my mother criticizing me on that Friday that the Mega Ball came out with all of her numbers that I failed to play. And that was that was for $500 million.
And she would have won? If you played
I would have. I probably would have ignored the Powerball at that point and would not have checked it till a week later. But it didn't happen that way. I didn't play her numbers, and that was a big failure on my part. When your mother tells you to do something to all the listening audience, please do it. So at that point, my friend said, hey, take your cell phone, take a picture of it, of the screen, and call me in the morning. So I came back and checked my system. There were the numbers. This time they had two sets of numbers. The set that they published, which was mine, and then they had another set. I don't own a television. I don't have a television in my house. Mm-hmm. So I did not see the televised version. So they had the online version and they had the televised version saying winning numbers, okay, on the same run. And of course I didn't get excited really because I said, oh God, it's probably 10 people with these numbers. You know, And I'm going to get very little, but I still said a win is a win to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I called my friend and I said, "Hey, it's showing again." He goes, "Hey, take a picture." I said, "Fine." So I took a picture with my cell phone, and, that was Sunday. And, after that, I had an appointment Monday, I think it was in Baltimore, to speak to some people about investing in my company. And, of course, I was more excited to know that I wouldn't need my accountant to challenge me on my budget. With the Powerball, with the Powerball ticket in my hands, because we were having to offer shares to the public. I think it was about 300 million shares at about a dollar and a quarter each, somewhere around there. So wow. I said, "Wow, I could buy my own shares." Thinking of the independent part of my accountant. You know, let me just keep this a secret from him and not expose this to it. But nevertheless, when Tuesday came, my associate out of McLean came by, picked me up, and drove me to Southeast over at the Big Chair, where the lottery claim center is.
Exactly.
And that's where I got the letdown at.
Yeah, what did they say to you when you came in? They just said sorry, John.
They said we made a mistake.
Hell yeah!
And that's what they said. This ticket is no good because we made a mistake. I said, "Well, that's impossible." I said, "There must be a remedy for this." He said, "No. Just, you see where the trash can is? Just ball it up, throw it away. It's no good." So I gave him a look like, that's what he told me. And I gave him a look. I said, "No, I think I'll just keep it."
Yeah.
He said, "We make mistakes all the time, sir. I don't think this will come out in the order that you think it's going to come out in." And, of course, I exchanged a few words with him. I don't care to say that it might take some public support points away from me, but I walked out.
Imagine. And I would have had a few choice words.
Well, anyone would have a problem with that. So I walked out. And
now that we have the basics, do we still have a caller on the line, Doug, that wants to ask a question? I don't want to keep him out there forever. You're right. Let's talk. What's your question, sir? Who are you and what's your question?
Yes, my name is Jerry Owens. I'm calling from Washington, D.C. And greetings to you, Mike and Mr. Cheeks. And I just
Jerry, how you doing?
I am doing well, Mr. Cheeks. I hadn't talked to you recently, and I heard about everything that you had been through with the lottery.
But
my question to you is: I wanted you to just touch a little bit on the public, a little bit about your reparations initiative, and I know that you are, but letting the public know that you're still supporting reparations and that you ran openly on reparations when you were seeking a seat on council, and also talk about a little bit about the injury and why you feel that is justified for the unjust enrichment that descendants of American slaves be compensated. And if you get a chance, stop by the work front when you can so we can chat.
Okay, not a problem.
And you know what?
I got to ask Mike if we can talk about that now, Jerry, because we were talking about the lottery, and of course we can.
Yes.
I'm sure the senator will allow us to talk about the slavery compensation piece after this. I'm not sure. Mike?
Absolutely, but can we continue on the lottery track for a minute, and then we'll get on to that? Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Jerry. And we've had several people on the show talk about reparations, and I support them, and the show supports them. So we absolutely want to hear We absolutely want to hear what John has to say. But first, let's finish the thing about the lottery, because that's just so intriguing. So I don't want to keep that guy out there forever. But so they told you, John, sorry, Charlie, no deal. Throw the ticket away and get lost. That's basically what they said.
You've pretty much summed it up in a way. But of course, I was more disappointed walking out thinking that I had to talk to my accountant about this win, which I had to at that point. I was in a very negative position, and I had to call and, you know, disclose what happened. And of course, he was more excited than I was. I mean, oh my God, John, you, I said, yes, it happened. Why aren't you excited? I said, because of the meeting, because of the phone discussion we had when it happened, you had exhausted me on my budget. And I didn't want to call you to tell you that this happened.
I got it.
Of course.
I get it. The first thing my accountant would tell me to do is put it all in my 401k. Take it all.
Okay.
Put it in your 401k. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. He was very excited. I said, well, don't get too happy because they just denied the claim at the lottery claim center. Of course, he blew his top and oh, no. We've got to come together. And he took a real serious interest in this, and we spoke about it. And he said, "By the way, it's time for you to file a complaint, a lawsuit."
Yeah,
and see where this
goes.
Do you
have a lawyer? Let me ask you: do you have a lawyer doing this?
Oh yeah. Well, the first two filings, I went in pro se because I really wanted to have a hands-on approach. Course, I had to back out of being pro se after the second judge, Judge Mitchell Rankin, who really defined who wins to me, how a win should be conducted or how an error should be conducted with the District Office of Lottery and Gaming. Judge Mitchell Rankin set the score right, in my opinion, when she asked the DC Office of Lottery and Gaming to read the numbers and explain to her what each of the five numbers represent and what opposite color number represents. And it was done through the Assistant DC Attorney General. And at that point, when she asked the DC Assistant Attorney General, how many people won in the District of Columbia or use these numbers? And it was no, Mr. Cheeks was the only one. So I got a little excited.
Yeah.
And she said, okay, how many people won the Powerball using the other set of displayed numbers? She said, no one, Your Honor. So far, Mr. Cheeks is the only winner in the country. Now, that's when I got excited. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you know, when you have dual sets of numbers, that means that, hey, it's up for grabs by multiple people.
Yeah, no, I get
it. And, you know, that's when I got excited, and that's when she asked, Judge Mitchell Rankin asked the assistant DC Attorney General if it was a mistake or a mishap. I don't know if I'm quoting it right. Where is your public service announcement?
Yeah.
She said, we don't have a public service announcement, Your Honor. And that's when the judge said, okay, this is going to take a different turn. I was asked, when am I going to submit? First, the judge was concerned that I was walking around with a $340 million lottery ticket in my pocket.
Yeah.
I reassured her that I had it in a safe.
Yeah.
So
good.
Then, yeah. So after that, Judge Mitchell Rankin, the DC office the DC Assistant Attorney General said, Your Honor, Mr. Cheeks didn't submit us our ticket. Well, I didn't do it because I didn't trust them, after the run inside of the claim center. telling me that to throw the ticket away, because they would have probably have done that had I would have given them the ticket. Okay?
Yeah.
So I had to protect my financial interest with them.
Oh, hell yeah. After they told you to throw it away, especially. One more pause, yeah. John, because we've got a guy that listens to the show all the time, somebody that you and I both know, I think.
Okay.
Taboo is on the phone and I want to say
Yeah,
Taboo, are you there?
I am. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey,
how you doing there?
Oh, hey, great. Good hearing both of your voices.
Sir, it's good hearing yours, Taboo.
So what's your question, Taboo?
I'm sorry, go ahead. Say again?
No, what's your question?
Well, I want to make a statement and a question.
Go ahead.
The statement first. As a layperson, it sounds like you've won the case because I hear they admitted that they made a mistake. And that's an admission of guilt. Guilt, you have the evidence to prove it. The government has to follow laws just like we all do, unless we go by double standards, which, you know, we all know this happens too often in society. But according to rule of law, they admit they made a mistake. And I would think, and I should ask you, aren't they bonded and insured? In order for us to have a business in the district, we have to be bonded and insured. So I would think they're bonded. So what is the problem? They admit they made a mistake.
Well, you know what? That's a great question, Taboo, because I know that if you're one of those guys, and you'll know this too, John, because you're in the insurance business, if you're one of those people that goes and makes the half court shot at the basketball game for $1 million or whatever, there's an insurance company that backs that up, that pays that claim. So that's a great question. Don't they have insurance, John? Do you know?
According to now that we're deep into it now, according to the owner of the lottery and Powerball system, all licensed agents or affiliates are supposed to have insurance, and also their contractors and also their key personnel are supposed to have insurance to sell these lottery tickets. And I don't know about, we're still waiting to get an answer from the district office of lottery and gaming, a correct answer from them, of course. Do they have insurance? Because that does cover what's called errors and omissions. And, you know, so far we have not, I guess my attorney has not received any type of communication from them if they
right.
do.
Am I still on?
Yeah, you're still on, Taboo. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's look at the, the 5th, I guess, and the 14th Amendment, too. That's your property. You're winner of it, you know? The mayor should have oversight to this, and Congress as well, if the lottery board is properly functioning. So there's more than just a lottery board to be held accountable here, and most definitely the bonded company.
Well, I think he's got an interesting case. I agree with you, Taboo. He's got a really interesting case. And because of the unusual situation that we find ourselves in the District of Columbia, where Congress actually does have the ultimate control, you may be right. There may be some accountability at the federal level. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But I think those are all interesting questions. And I think that they all need to be answered. And thanks for calling in, Taboo. We really appreciate it. So what do you think, John? You think that
Taboo
has a point?
Oh, okay. I'm listening.
Yeah, go ahead. What do you think, John, about Taboo's point first of all, let me ask you, who do you think is culpable here? As your lawyer told you, Powerball or the District of Columbia Gaming people?
It's four different defendants.
Mm-hmm.
DC Office of Lottery and Gaming, the contractor, Powerball, and probably some other defendants that we don't know yet. And you know, for the most part, the same incident happened in Iowa in November of 2023, November 27th, where their system had the same issue.
And what happened in that case? Do you know?
Well, that case, they paid all of the ticket holders the next day. They had a public service announcement saying that the system erred, and they paid both ticket holders, the ones that had the televised version and the ones who had their human. Let's see here. I'll tell you what they call it. If you can give me 1 second, I'll give you the name of what it was called. Because they all should have insurance to cover this. It was called Posted Numbers by Human Error. A Accidental Confusion by Human Error. Posted Numbers on their webpage. And that's the same thing that happened in the district. And of course the insurance or either the state of Iowa or both paid the claims of all the ticket holders. It was 4,000 people who had those numbers.
Wow.
So they paid the 4,000 who had the numbers that they posted in error. Okay. And they said that they had to, in order to keep the public trust, influence going, because, you know, people buy lottery tickets in trusting that the system or the agency will do the right thing. And of course, here in the district, they didn't serve me correctly.
I was only
winner in the country, by the way, of the Powerball.
Well,
local and national.
You know, I not only play the Powerball, as I told you, every week, because I play it, I see it as entertainment. You know, I like to sit around and think about what I would do with all that money. Oh, my God, I would buy that $50 million. You know, if I won $500 million, I've already got $400 million of it spent. You know, I would buy a big condo and I'd have a Ferrari. And, you know, I did a scratch off when, you know, there's so many people that buy these lottery tickets that I went to the Office of Gaming and I said, let's do a 51 state lottery ticket. And they did it. And it's raised well over $1 million for the city. So, And so not that you're sharing any of that money with my delegation, but we raised it for the city, and it's good. We're raising awareness about statehood. But let me talk a little bit about, you know, obviously you've got an interesting case. Obviously you've got to come back at some point and tell us as this progresses, as things happen. But let me also ask you, so we don't run out of time, because I know how important this is to you, talk about reparations for a minute, what Jerry wanted to talk about. And I'm sure
that's a dear and close subject to my heart.
I know.
Thank you, Senator, for also embracing that sensitive and touchy subject during this time and era in the district. That goes a long way with me because of the committee that I chair. You know, it's one of those things where within the descendants of the slaves who are here in the district, we have reparations, and we also have what's called slavery compensation, which is not a taxpayer responsible payout to us. It goes to the actual industries, companies, associations, all who benefited from our ancestors' free labor, as well as human rights violations. Reparations is a taxpayer's responsibility, and we shied away. My committee shied away from that because reparations applies to a situation that goes into, like Tulsa, D.C. had riots in some places, from what I hear, in Southwest, where there was an actual race riot, where people got displaced from housing and had to be moved out, sent to Northeast or somewhere else, you know, without any rights. That's the true definition of reparation. I'm not, that goes into, I should say, the public paying for the injury. We believe that the public should not pay for the injury because it doesn't pay enough. Reparations pays $35,000.
Right.
The slavery compensation package pays $1.8 million.
Yeah.
And that's a total of about $58 trillion to pay every American in this country who is a descendant of a slave, okay, compared to reparations given $35,000, and you still have the same problems of public housing and all kinds of other issues that we still don't know how to fix.
Well, let me tell you that I have some experience with Native Americans. I've worked with Native American tribes, and very often the reparations that have been paid to Native Americans have been paid the way you described, actually paid to the tribe to use for the benefit of the tribe rather than paid to individual members of the tribe. Although there have been reparations too, and income that are paid directly to members of the tribe. Now, it seems to me that you're right. In the cases where reparations have been paid to the tribe as a whole, and they've done things like founded Indian colleges and founded Indian businesses and other things, that it's worked out better in the long run than giving individual payments to individuals. So I just wanted to add that. It seems like the model that you're putting forth is certainly the one that's more practical and would work.
Yeah, well, exactly. It goes, and I've met with some of the actors who are ready to start funding this, and my committee, you know, some of the lottery winnings that I'm going to use, I'm buying a bank depository in Georgetown, so that we can have a depository center, so that people can make donations who want to free their consciousness, and we're going to have a ticker. An accounting ticker that says this is what we owe, this is what we've collected, so that they can see with themselves where their money is going. And of course, the Episcopal Church has came up to say, hey, we'll do this if you do that. And, you know, D.C. will be the first start of the slavery compensation depository and payout of this country. The other cities and states, they've started reparations, but that comes with a taxpayer's responsibility. I'm not against reparations, but at this point, we need slavery compensation, something that the taxpayer does not have to pay for unless they want to. And we've set up this 501(c) company just to do that and to accumulate it to a certain point and take applications from the descendants. You know, they're going to have to fill out an app and also take their DNA, because, as you know, slavery was not about just unpaid wages. It was about human rights violations, to where our families were separated and shipped around the country. You know, I could be talking to someone and don't even know if they were my family member. So that's why we have started the quest for everyone to take their DNA and find out who they are, where they're from, and where their next of kin. Your next of kin could be your next door neighbor, or they could be all the way on the West Coast. And Jerry Owens, the gentleman who called, worked with me on that diligently while I campaigned. 1 year when I ran, I think, for Eleanor's seat for the delegate of the House. I was running on the agenda of of taxpayer reduction and wealth creation, which means that upon the Slavery Compensation Act being enforced in the district, the taxpayers would, of course, would take a reduction of cash coming out of their pockets, such as public housing and some other programs that, of course, you know, that the taxpayers have to pay for, which has caused a lot of, you know, pain in some of our pockets, and others, they don't care. And, you know, that's the difference between reparations and slavery compensation.
Well, and you know, something's obviously something needs to be done. I was very lucky in life that I had a father. He was a con man. He wasn't a great guy, but he absolutely believed that all people were exactly the same. And that's, you know, that there were the same amount of smart people and dumb people and good people and bad people in every sex and every, you know, race and every religion and every political philosophy. And that's what I start with. I start with God, you know, my feeling that God made everybody the same. And when they come out so differently in the long run, you really need to intervene and find out what those things are that stopped the development. And I think in their development as a culture and as a people, and I certainly think that when it comes to African Americans in the District of Columbia or in America and slavery, we know the answer to that. It was, you know, it started out with slavery and it's evolved, but there are vestiges of it that exist today. We all know that.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
oh,
yeah, we really need to do something. Let me ask you.
Well,
so,
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
So, John, let's say you get your $340 million. I've run for public office 5 times. You run for public office 7 times. Are you going to run for public office? Are you going to run for public office?
Well, you would have to draft me, Mike. You would have to. You guys, the people of the District of Columbia would have to draft me to run for office again. As you know, it was hard out there getting signatures.
Yeah,
and the grueling process. You know, it's not easy.
But you know what?
Not to say I don't care about the public. Now I do care absolutely about the public.
But you know what? $340 million, you could pay somebody to get your signature. You know,
that's the thing, right? Could.
Yeah, you could. You could get a lot of signatures, and you could run a hell of a campaign, but that's the one, that's a big question I have for you. Cause like I said, I'll never win the money, but I've already spent it. What's the first thing you thought of did you think of something? I'm going to do this with the money if I get it, or this is what I'm going to do.
When it first sat in, well, normally, you know, I've already have a plan in motion. In my mindset, the first thing I wanted to do is pay off all my debtors. I wanted to do that. That's, after 20 years, you can accumulate a lot of debt, and the longer you live, the longer the debt, the more the debts compile. So I wanted to pay off all of my debts. You know, I have a debt sheet, by the way, of everyone who I either owe money to or borrow money from, or just anything. You know, from real estate to non-secured debts. My accountant demanded that happen. And, you know, it actually started, the debt sheet started back in 2009, I believe, when they started taking a tab on all my debts, or any private person or entity. So, you hear people saying everybody's coming up to them asking for money. Well, I know everyone who I owe. And I have not forgotten them. And it was such a challenging but yet beautiful thing that my accountant, I give him credit for making me design my debt schedule or liability schedule, you know, to where I could see exactly what I owe, who I owe, and what it takes for me to come out of debt in terms
of dollar signs. You know, I got to tell you, I ran a business for 25 years, and at the end of my business, I took a hit for about $40,000 that I took out of my own pocket, out of the business, that I could have paid myself to make sure that every vendor I had ever used got paid. That got paid every dime that they got. So in other words, what I'm saying is when I ended up my business, I was $40,000 in debt to myself of past salary. Okay. But I forgave that so that I could pay all my vendors. And, you know, because I thought to myself, these are the people that made me rich. So,
right?
I'm not going to turn my back on them. And
that no, you
was,
can't. You can't. Because karma does come around twice.
Right. And that was 15. That was 15 years ago. And I feel better about it. You know, I always use union labor, for example. I felt good that people that worked for me had a pension and their wives got something. If they passed away, they had a health insurance and life insurance.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, you always feel good about those things. So that's the right
thing.
And
if it wasn't, for our unions, we wouldn't be in a position that we're in within building a middle class or a upper lower class or, you know, any class. You know, the unions supported people. You know, I mean, I don't have a problem with unions. I think they're the best thing that could have ever happened.
Yeah, me too.
On any level of professionalism in this country, you know.
Some people
are against them, but I'm not.
But some of the most trusted people we have in America are union members, like nurses and teachers and firemen and police officers. All those people belong to
unions. I'm a union member myself, by the way.
Me too. I was
689, I think 1724, more so the transportation union. I am a union member. And
I lied about my age when I was 17, which you could do back then. And at 18, I had to be 18 to be a truck driver, to be a delivery driver. And I got a job as a delivery driver. Now, I'm an orphan, so I've been working since I was 14 years old. And I got my first day off with pay, my first sick leave, my first bonus, all those things when I became a Teamster. Prior to that, you know, I had nothing but an hourly wage, and you know, so I've always supported unions. I know some people are against them. Some people are against reparations too. But you know, Mark Twain said it, and I try to live by it. You're never wrong to do the right thing, and reparations are the right thing. They are the right thing. And it may be hard, and it may be hard to do it, but they're the right thing. So you're never wrong in doing that.
It's not hard. It's not hard to the version of reparations is I know it's a common used rally cry word within our community, but the real impact of the injury is slavery compensation. Because it gives the corporations, the industries, and institutions the responsibility of paying forward for the injury. And it doesn't land on the people. That's why we have a real hard problem with the general public taxpayers wanting to embrace that, because they're going to have to dig in their pocket. We're saying that we have a better solution to go with slavery compensation and let the corporations and the churches and the financial institutions and others who participated in enslaving our ancestors. And like that, nobody's upset with anyone. But reparations is a little sticky, because it could start a military action against some of the countries in Africa, some of the governments in Africa, where our footprint is from. That's why we ask for a DNA test to make sure you're a certain percentage of African, so we can identify where you're from. But if, you know, reparations, you know, we could, some hot president gets in your mind, okay, you want reparations? Let's go storm the shores of Western Africa.
Right.
And rightfully so, because you're going in there to seize land and property where some 41 million descendants live in the United States of America who are from the western shores of Africa. And we should be very mindful how we ask for that. Because there's an old saying, be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. You know?
Yeah,
but
my grandmother used to say that.
Yeah, that stands true today.
Well, and everybody should do that. You know, my kids sent me a DNA test. I have to say this really quick, that I grew up in my Italian grandmother's house with my Italian grandparents in North New Jersey, in the Italian section of North New Jersey. I always wanted to be Italian. I have blue eyes and blonde hair. My name is Brown, and they gave me a DNA test. And John, I'm 51% Italian. I said, I made
Whoa.
It. I made the cut,
that's fair.
You know? Yeah, so it's
I had my DNA
to know,
test,
right?
Too.
You did.
I can tell you mine. If you want to hear,
go ahead.
Quickly.
What is it?
I'm 65% African.
Uh huh.
I am. What else? 15% Native American. My African DNA is from the Congo, Botswana, and Angola. We arrived here 1710, Hampton Roads, Virginia, from Angola. Wow. 1750. Washington, D.C. proper, which is now Alexandria, Virginia,
right,
from the Congo. And then Botswana, 1823 in North Carolina. And also, my 15% Native American blood is from the Cherokee Nation and the Blackfoot Seminole Nation out of Florida, as well as my 20% European bloodline, which I had to call a lot of my friends who were Irish because they used to tell me that I was one of them because I had freckles in my face.
Well, there you go.
I found out that I was Irish and found out that I'm also part British, but my most dominant European trait is Scandinavian. So that's who I am.
Well, you know, my brother used to tell me, Michael, you've got a Roman nose. It's Roman all over your face. So, it's good to have a big brother, right, to set you straight. But, I think it's for me, it was fun to know that fact. But I think it's important, right, because past is prologue. And it's if you want to know where you're going, you really should know where you came from.
Absolutely. When I found out I was uplifted, I felt free. I felt I was in touch with myself as a whole person. There's a lot of our people here who are descendants of slaves who don't know their actual DNA.
And yeah, that's true.
That's something that has to be addressed. You know, that's something that we need to all at least give them a start to begin to find out who they are. Because that's so important. And you'll find out the habits that you do. I mean, I like to go and dip into the Chesapeake when the water's cold. You know, I'm a Kodiak bear.
Uh-huh.
I like to go and hang out. I like to go hang out with the polar bears, you know?
Oh, my
but I
God.
Won't go all the way down like a polar bear. I'll just go up to my neck and that's it.
Wow.
And I'm due for a good dip. You know, I've been really going through a lot of problems not taking my dip, you know?
Well, every time I see those guys, I go, oh, I can't. I get cold just watching them, you know, when they have money.
No, no, you have to go join them. You got to go join them.
Oh, my God.
You got to join them. You got to take the dip. Hey, look, it'll enlighten you. It'll make you stronger in areas you never thought of.
Well, you know what, John? I'm Italian, so I'll sit there and eat a slice of pizza and watch you do it.
That's a deal. No problem.
But anyway, we're running out of time here, John, and I want to have you back at some point as this progresses. But we're running out of time, so let me ask you, is there anything you want to say that I haven't asked you that you want to say?
Sure. And I'm going to be very mindful and respectful to all of our D.C. elected officials. Now's the time that all of you come together and do the right thing. You know,
yeah.
Yeah. It's not like you don't know me, and it's not like you overlooked the error of your system. You know, it's more, yeah. You know, it's not complicated. Just do the right thing. You know, stop the war from escalating. You know, right now you have a chance to do the right thing before May 17th. You know, and I don't have a problem with the mayor. I don't have a problem with anyone, Senator, as you know. I just need them to do the right thing, you know, which is to pay them so that their lottery system isn't the microscope or the doubtful buyers of this country, because this is all over the world. Everybody's talking about it. Even the king is reading about this. I'm just saying, they have a chance to do the right thing. Do it.
You know what, John? You're so right about this. I have my former campaign manager in Arizona and my daughter in Denver. And I just happened to talk to both of them during the weekend. I said, oh, yeah, we got this guy, John Cheeks. And both of them said, oh, yeah, I read about that. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, everybody's talking about it. And,
yeah, they are.
And the only thing that I can add is that I've stood out in the cold with you. I've gotten signatures. I can tell you this is a really nice man. I'm not going to lie about it. It's not like we're good friends or anything, but I can tell you that my impression of you, John, has always been that you're a very nice person, a decent person, and you deserve to be treated decently. So I hope you're right. I hope people do that. We leave every week. We leave with a song. We end the show with a song. Play ourselves out with a song, and we always dedicate it to our guests. And this one goes out to John Cheeks. This is one of my favorite songs by Mary Chapin Carpenter. I hope it comes true for you, John. It's called "I Feel Lucky." And John Cheeks, I hope you feel lucky, and I hope it works out for you, buddy. It will,
Mike. We're gonna bring it together. We're gonna bring closure and a victory. Right. My victory is everybody's victory.
Okay,
I have plans to help the people.
Okay, I know you do, John. You've always been out there, and I know if the money comes to you, that you'll do the right thing too. That you will
absolutely.
Help. And you're a good human being, and thanks for being on my show, and best of luck. I hope you get every penny of it. I hope you get every penny of it. Okay.
Well, my attorney's going to do that, Mike. And look, thank you, Senator. I appreciate the exposure here to inform the public.
Yeah, that's great. And you know what? This will be archived on our website, folks. So if you have somebody that wasn't able to listen tonight, or if John, if you want to use the show, you can download it off our website, bbsradio.com, and you'll find the show there after it should be posted by Tuesday. And it also plays on WEAC Radio 3 times this week. So listen
Thank you.
In.
Thank you.
And let's get this going. Maybe we should start a movement.
We're going to have to. I mean, you know, I'm dying to throw a nice little bash. You know, so we all can blow a little steam off and turn the page on this and keep it moving.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that comes true. See y'all next week. Thanks, John Cheeks. Here's our song. Bye.
Good You're night, welcome. Everybody. All right.
Thanks. Bye.
All right.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.